The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi, I'm Bunny Guinness, and this is my podcast, Bunny in the Garden, with someone special. Someone who is well known for something other than their green fingers, but who is also a mustard-keen gardener. I'll discover them through their garden, why, how, and when they garden, the best tips they've learnt, and their gardening style and approach. So today, I'm with Desmond McCarthy in the garden of his beautiful 17th century Wyveton Hall. The hall starred with Desmond in the hit BBC television series Normal for Norfolk, about the trials and tribulations of keeping an historic property, the small farm, and its owner in an appropriate style for the 21st century. Desmond, you've lived most of your life here, apart from a short stint at Cirencester Agricultural College. You went to Cirencester from school, is that right?
Yes, I'd worked on a farm in France first.
Right. And you did the year course at Cirencester, did you?
No, 2 years.
Oh, did the more serious course, yes. And did you feel privileged in inheriting such a fabulous corner of the country? You keep mentioning in the wonderful programmes that you did that you haven't got out and about, you spent most of your life here, and that you may have arrested development as a result of it. But do you actually resent that? Or I very much get the feel that you're very happy in your own skin here, this is your life, you love it, and you've made it into something really special.
Well, I have lived all my life here, and I do think today, where everyone moves around so much, I recognise that it is very special, because you recognise the changes. But it's always nice to go see other people, other places, and get away. And I haven't worked for anyone, which is a disadvantage.
Well, in some ways, but not necessarily. And when the BBC approached you to do the series, which I have to say I thought was a cracking series, were you happy with it? When you saw the end result, were you really happy with it, or were you slightly...
Yes, I loved... Well, now my mother's no longer alive. It's lovely recording all that, and the people who were working here. And in those days we were growing fruit and had a kind of bit more vibrant farm. And some of the mentioning country sports and shooting, which was the main objective of the film, to show how we need to manage nature and the positives of getting encouraging a diverse, breeding birds and on the marshes, and encouraging all that.
Yeah, I don't think they perhaps gave enough weight to the fact that you are a pretty strong naturalist and you have a real passion for the countryside. They seem to emphasise more the shooting, hunting, fishing bit, possibly because they thought that was more interesting to the viewers, I don't know. But I did get the feel that you were passionate about the nature as well. But when did you know the title when they approached you that was going to be called Normal for Norfolk?
No, we devised that together.
Oh, right.
And I can't remember what the options. I wanted to bring Norfolk into the title.
Yes.
And anyway, NFN used to be on people's notes at the doctor. And
oh, really?
Yes. Anyway, I thought in the careful world we live in, they may not like it, but it was very good the BBC did like it.
Yes, because I think this country, we have so many regional differences. NFN, so Normal for Norfolk, is on the doctor's note. So it almost implies they're something, well, as some people say,
a little funny.
A little funny, yeah. What I do think is we have got huge regional differences across the country, haven't we? And they're different in Scotland, in Manchester, in Wales. And I love that. I think we should embrace that.
And I think younger people do embrace the accents more now than perhaps they did. If you went away, there is a lady working here who's from County Durham, and she said when she came to Norfolk, her mother made her go for elocution lessons, which is a great shame. But Norfolk accent and the Norfolk stories and the dry humour is wonderful,
yeah,
as it is probably in Cumberland and the accent over the border in Dumfriesshire.
Yeah, I quite agree. But I thought that the accents were actually dying because they say, you know, lots of, if you listen to Etonians, where I was used to sort of pick out an Etonian at 10 paces by the way they spoke. But now they speak the estuary English and they're trying to blend in, as is the bloke from East End of London. And so we are all, I thought, levelling off and sounding more the same than we used to maybe 30 years ago.
Well, we live in front of the telly. So that's, I'm afraid, had something to do with it.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That all these sort of reality TV programmes, we all want to be like them, perhaps. Except you, Norman. I mean, except you, Desmond. Yeah.
Norman for Norfolk.
Norman for Norfolk.
That was the other mistake. I don't mind being called the wrong name, but...
Does anyone else call you Norman for Norfolk?
No, they do. They haven't
really
read it properly. And they call it Norman for Norfolk.
Oh, God,
anyway,
that was faux pas.
From Norfolk, doesn't matter.
I was expecting, if I'm honest, though, that when I saw the title of the programme, I thought that they would make you far, or you would be far more eccentric than you are, because and far more off the wall. But I reckon when I saw all the programmes that actually everybody, all the audience were on your side, weren't they? I think we were with you. We recognised you had a hugely difficult job to maintain. I must say, this is the most fantastic house I've ever seen. I think there's something about the architecture, the flint and the brickwork, the sort of Dutch influence with the OG arches on the gable ends, it and the spaces that all the different buildings, the farm buildings and the house create, the beautiful courtyards. I just think it's amazing. And even if you had to maintain a house like this with 1,000 acres, I think you'd be struggling, wouldn't you? It just wouldn't pay it.
No, it's quite hard. It's quite un-English in some respects, in that the farm is very close. It's not like an 18th century house on its own and then a garden a long way off and the farm buildings even further. Mm-hmm. This is very much the farm buildings part of connected to the house.
And that's what gives it its charm.
It is
because the barns are as beautiful as the house, but they're a different style, but
yes,
they're lovely.
And it's lovely seeing all the changes in the brickwork showing the alterations that have taken place. We're sitting in the sunken garden now. And in 1905, the place was sold and a family came here called Watson Kennedy. A rich Mrs. Watson married a poor, well-born Colonel Kennedy, and they became Watson Kennedy, and they wanted a tip-top place. And the head gardener was sent to Wisley every year, and all that sort of thing, and the six gardeners, or seven gardeners. Anyway, where we're sitting, and I'm looking at this wall, before the sunk garden, it would have been a place where the carriages would have come in. There are no yew hedges, carriages would have come in and stopped at the front of the house, and then gone through an archway into it, through the barn next door, into a coach house.
Yeah.
Which is now bricked up.
No.
But you can see all the old
changes.
Changes.
Yeah.
And the morning, early morning, the low sun on the brickwork is beautiful.
Yeah. No.
All those are reasons why I've probably never gone to get another job.
No, I can totally understand it.
Because there's so much
it.
To look at.
And it
I did have white doves for a time. We've got a lovely dovecot with lots of little holes for the doves to go in, Edwardian. And I always wanted doves, and I eventually got some. A nice man called Reggie Holman, who'd worked here for 50 years, he said, "Oh, bless boy, you'll regret that. They'll shit everywhere." And the doves did very well. The doves did shit everywhere, and we did start to regret it. But early morning, the white doves would get up, and they would look orange in the early morning light from the sun. That was beautiful, rather like the doves at, not quite as fancy as at Farringdon House.
Farringdon House, that's right. Just away from the garden, can I just get back to a most important thing? I have to say, Desmond, I do have a bit of a thing about eyebrows, because my husband's mother was an alcoholic, and quite often she had no eyebrows. She would draw them on, and she would draw them on with the wrong colour and the wrong shape, and she had sort of extraordinary eyebrows that came out of her head. And so eyebrows really register with me. But I think yours are the best eyebrows I've ever seen. Do you think your eyebrows were key in getting you the TV commission? I love the quote. I think you might not like this, but I love the quote from the Oldie Mad. So the Oldie came, and the guy who, the editor, I think, came and reviewed your cafe, gave it stunning reviews. But he started off with, and I have to say, I thought it was fabulous, "As this renowned bird lover, i.e. you, sprung hobbit-like from the undergrowth of his garden," he wrote, "I was delighted to discover he had trained two young blackbirds to perch on his forehead."
At least it was two, and not one.
Yes.
Which we used to know someone
with a monobrow.
Monobrow. His family business was Bissell carpet cleaners. Carpet sweepers.
But then,
so the monobrow is to be avoided.
Absolutely. But then he said, "As I got closer, I realised they were your eyebrows." Now, you tutted when they read that out on the television series, but I have to say, they are a fantastic feature.
Now, they are a feature. I don't quite know. My father had quite good eyebrows. We have Greek relations, but they don't have massive eyebrows, so I think it's Irish. I was once held in customs as I entered in Egypt, and the man held me for an uncomfortable long time as he gazed. He wasn't gazing at my passport, he was gazing at my eyebrows.
He thought you'd stuck them on as a false disguise.
I don't know. I think it was a second coming or something. I think there may be some connection with pharaohs.
But now you can buy spectacles with copies of your blackbird eyebrows attached. Have you patented those? And can I buy a pair in the cafe?
You can definitely buy a pair. They're not patented. I'm afraid they're fine Chinese construction.
Oh, you missed out there, Desmond.
They are nice.
Yes. But I have to ask, when you were doing the series, did a makeup artist titivate them for you before you started?
No.
She didn't get the tongs out.
No, it wasn't that sort of filmmaking.
But they look so perfect.
No, they did. Sometimes, we are all told we inherit one side of our face from one parent and the other side from the other. One side goes up and one side goes down, but rather they both went up and be buoyant. But anyway,
I suppose they can reflect your mood. If they were down, they would look sad.
Yes, yes, yes.
But they are beautifully toprid to the listener. They are the most beautifully toprid eyebrows you will ever see. And I think they must have helped you get the part.
Well, that's fantastic to know. And I'll make sure they're pointing the right way next time I go for another part. I did meet Dennis Healy once.
Oh, you're better than Dennis's. Well, yours way were, beat his.
His were like antenna.
Coming out horizontally. More.
No, yes, yours? I had an uncle who was a very good paediatrician, and someone crossed a room once and said, "You must be related to Dermot McCarthy," because he had, and he was called Beetle at his prep school, because he had antennae.
Oh, lovely, gosh.
So they are McCarthy side of the family.
Right. So the whole series was about the an aristocratic farmer, wasn't it, i.e. you.
You're hardly aristocratic, but
well,
still.
Well, people, well, they build you as that. Okay, and I think I think you've got to take it, Desmond. I think you are sort of. You are pretty well aristocratic, okay. I would say. But people do find the aristocracy fascinating. Because let's face it, you tend to be a bit more eccentric. Because there's not many of you. You're a rare species in a very rare habitat. And I think people love eccentrics. They're refreshing, aren't they? And the series really celebrated that. And in today, when everyone is coming out sort of flatlining, we're all pretty much the same.
No, we don't want too much the same.
We don't. And you really celebrate that. And I think it's lovely.
And but some of us get bored very easily.
And some of you get very bored very easily. But I think when I was thinking about why are the aristocracy a little bit eccentric, and I suppose it's because hereditarily there's been quite a small gene pool because they tend to interbreed, don't they, because they want to keep the money in the lines, and that tends to be this thing. And then you were often brought up by a nanny and only met your parents after tea when you'd had your face washed and your bottom wiped. And then age 7, you'd be sent away to prep school, which is pretty weird. And then age 12 or 13...
And you'd meet other people from the similar...
Exactly. And then 12 or 13, you'd go away to boarding school and you'd have the shit beaten out of you and be bullied to massively... So it is a pretty odd upbringing, isn't it? But and it is all.
Well, it was never as bad as that. But well, I was sent away to a prep school in Surrey, and
which one was it? Not Ashdown House.
It was called Skatecliffe.
Right.
Wonderful place.
Yes.
Where when the headmaster did die, and he had an obituary, Mr. Vickers' obituary was in the newspaper. It did sound like it was from something from an Evelyn Waugh novel. And he was, everyone who went there still has close friends from that era.
Yeah.
Even from better than our later schools.
I mean, in many cases, like my husband, he was sent away, like you, very early. But because his mum was an alcoholic and his father had died, for him, you know, he got fed regularly. He got clothes, washed, so it was fantastic. But I think it's horses for courses, really. But when you're doing sort of television series like yours, they always film it to bring out the most jeopardising bits, the most odd bits. And for every 30 minutes, how many hours of filming would they have done to find those juicy bits, really?
I don't know. I mean... I have no idea how much editing. There were a couple of very funny bits, sadly, they cut out.
Oh, which? Tell us.
Oh, there was we were cutting down a tree and it fell into a ditch. Very few streams in this bit of Norfolk. Anyway, we dragged it out and it came out with a marvellous amount of very, very green... weed, and the man helping me picked up the weed, and he was quite hot, picked up the weed and put it over his head and it gave him the most wonderful green wig.
Why did they fell about?
I don't know why. It's a shame. Peter Church was he's the man who's helping build the wall.
Yes.
Anyway, he's quite
it was him.
Quite
a character.
Vigorous character. Anyway, no, there were some bits I'm sure that were cut out, but I'm loved. I find it slightly embarrassing looking at it myself, but I'm really happy other people enjoy it. And lovely seeing my mother in it. She slightly thought it's not the sort of thing one does, but it's helped get the place known, brings people here.
Yeah.
People love coming round the garden. I love showing people round the garden. I love sharing it It is a very special place.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, I think they were slightly unfair in places, because your son, when he finds out that you're charging your mother rent, refers to you as a bastard. But obviously, for tax reasons, she would pay you a salary, because you don't want to have a massive pot in her thing when she dies, or you'll have a huge inheritance tax bill.
Yes,
so that was just so obvious.
She never owned this house. And it was, that was good. That's right. She did pay a rent.
Yeah, and that would be so financially worthwhile for both of you. So it was crazy to leave that on it, because you obviously were not a bastard. You obviously cared for her. You looked after her. You got along with her. And she couldn't have managed without you. So I think that was a bit silly to leave it in.
Oh, well, I don't. I think it was funny. I don't mind that bit. And Edmund is now a bit older. He's working, and he's got a slightly harsher view, having never sort of done the rather gentle work, farm work. He's got a slightly harsher view on people working here, but he does love the place.
Yes.
And I hope we'll live here one day.
And other things, misdemeanours they picked up, like when your first guest arrived at the newly renovated holiday cottage, you were rather the worst for wear, because you'd had an ease up the night before.
And we had drunk some Madeira or something like that that had been bottled. It was the same year as the Battle of Waterloo.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, and terrible hangover.
And you were, the poor bloke was waiting.
We hadn't lost the key. Already.
And when you opened the cafe and the till didn't work and those sort of things. I mean, when we've done reality shows and they've approached you about them, they say, where's the jeopardy? Because one of them was building gardens and I set them off six gardens we were working on. And they said, but where's the jeopardy? This is only going to be interesting if there's jeopardy. But if I'm building gardens for people, the last thing I want is jeopardy.
I know, but it does happen.
It does happen. And they obviously edit it to make it sound more like that than it really is, to rank up the viewing numbers, which is fine. But I think sometimes the audience don't always realise that. And, I just think it's slightly unfair. Like when you had you were looking through the review comments and a load of cyclists came in Lycra. And you said something like, well, I won't have Lycra people.
No Lycra at lunchtime.
No Lycra at lunchtime. But they had actually turned up an hour late. They'd tripled in number to how many had booked. So fair dues,
you know? Yes, you're absolutely right. No, it was slightly tongue-in-cheek. You have to... Jokes don't always go down that well, but that perhaps adds to the fun.
I like it. No, I like it. I think that was why it was a very good viewing experience. So back to your son Edmund, that obviously featured on the programme a fair bit. And do you think he will come back here?
Well, one day, but you know, at a small farm, unless you do absolutely everything yourself or something very intense, is a hard thing to make a viable business. And anyway, he's very lucky and has a good job in London at the moment.
What does he do?
He works in insurance.
Yes.
And enjoying that and doing well and meeting lots of good people. So he's doing that, but he does love it here, as does my daughter Isabel. And she comes a lot. She's a photographer, and she comes and uses our incredibly decrepit sheds full of rubbish as sets, and the marshes and the reed beds.
Oh, lovely.
So she does nice photographic shoots here.
Oh,
but Edmund, I think, will. He likes the sea and boating and the marshes. And
the perfect combination, of course, would be to have both, wouldn't it? He'd have a London income. And he'd commute from here, because a lot of people I work with commute from Norwich to London, and they don't go every day now. Lots of people work from home. So hopefully that he could manage that.
Maybe. Lovely. It's also marvellous to work abroad and then you come back and, you know, the experience I didn't have. Who knows? Everything is global now.
Yes. Lots of opportunities, and they'll be changing, no doubt, over the next 10 years.
Yes.
So what definitely comes over in the series is your love of the land, nature, the place, country pursuits and your staff. And you find your employees taxing at times and vice versa. But it did come over that it was a pretty happy setup. And you must be employing almost as many people, if not more, as the place would have employed in its heyday when it was a thriving mixed farm or whatever. But what is different now is that many people can enjoy it. It's not just the grand family who are here and the minions. It's the public can come and visit it, see the experience, see the garden, see the wonderful house. And that's great. Don't you think that's amazing in a way?
Well, that's very interesting. And very, it's clever of you to have spotted the employment numbers. Because I'm sure when Mrs. Watson Kennedy lived here, I think her family had made money in shipping.
She came in 1906, yes. And she bought it in 1906.
Yeah.
Yes,
and did it up, and it was all. And there was a fruit farm here, a Jersey herd, a milk round, lovely garden, and staff in the house, a billiard room. She added on all these sort of things. And it was very well run. Not so much now, we used to get the grandchildren or even children of people who'd worked here coming and saying, can we have a look round?
Mm.
Can
oh,
we
lovely.
See the summer house? That's mm. where our parents went courting.
Yeah.
And things like that. And the son of the chauffeur or something would come and look around and see where the cars were parked. Anyway.
But you say it was very well run, but she had deep, deep pockets. You know, she had
pockets.
Lots of staff.
Yes. I'm sure it never. I'd love to see the accounts.
Yes.
They were, anyway, I've never, their trustees were a family called Biddulph, who live at Rodmarton Manor.
I know.
And I've never been, I have seen the front of the house. Rodmarton is near...
Cirencester, that's neck of the woods.
Tetbury.
Yeah, I'm going there
and
shortly.
Berry Arts and Crafts.
Yeah, beautiful garden.
And I think the Biddulphs are still there. And it's just very, very similar to the work by Sir Guy Dorber, who built on the west wing of this house.
Oh, right. Interesting. Interesting you say that. We worked for some clients who had a small dairy farm up in Cheshire. And they made it pay by making their own ice cream. And they did drive-in takeaway ice cream. They're called Snugbury's and they sell to supermarkets and everyone. But we were working there on a November evening in the dusk at 5 o'clock. It was pouring with rain. And there were queues of people coming to get the takeaway ice cream. So with these places, I think you just need to find the best formula, don't you? And it changes. And they had to build in massive loops around the farm for the car to get the cars off the road because the police, they were blocking the roads. Mm. And they had massive jams. So there were lots of loops coming in on the field to get them off the roads to stop blocking the highways. It's just finding that niche, isn't it? And I think you've pretty well got it here with your beautiful cafe, you're starting different outlets. It's you people come to see probably as well. Well, because you are pretty well known now.
Well, that's nice of you to say so. But yeah, we when we did do the television programme, we did have rather too many cars coming through the village, and there was minor uproar mm-hmm. in the village, similar to another august farmer
yes.
from the Cotswolds.
Chippy Norton set.
And,
yes.
And I had to put up some other signs saying avoid the village because they didn't like the cars. Of course, it hasn't lasted like that. But we do need visitors, and we love having visitors. And our cafe, try not to have too many people working there, but we do have, I'm slightly sedated on payday. But anyway, Kim Coleman, who works here, is in charge of that, and it is a vital bit that has to be kept under control, the wages.
I,
but
yeah.
You have to reward people well, And the bit in your podcast about Hambledon Hall taught me a lesson that the chef has a share in things.
Yeah, another client does that. I think he was the one who first started it, giving him a share, and it makes the because otherwise they move on.
Yes.
And the part of the reason they come here is the food, and it is superb, and they want it, and you want to keep him. I did wonder whether actually Clarkson's program was inspired by you, because you're the precursor to that. You're on a similar theme, the jeopardy of running a farm and making it viable in today's thing. And I think it might well be that.
I think so. And it's great program. And the characters are fantastic. Of course, he's very famous because of his previous car program.
And his wit, a bit
and
like you.
And he's very witty.
Yeah.
And far better at drinking beer than me. But and his nice main man Caleb is superb.
Yeah.
And the Cotswolds is a fantastic area. It's very hard. It's not good soil, so it's hard to do farming on it.
Mm. Limestone brash, dreadful class 3 agricultural land.
But I wish they had done a little bit more about country life. He was quite good about pointing out the how we need to manage badgers, for instance, and he wasn't shy about that.
Mm.
I think the makers of the program, I mean, they're very keen on selling the program. There weren't slight missed opportunity on the country matters. I mean, they did show felling trees, thinning woods that are necessary, and there were complaints from people, oh, why are they desecrating the forests? Well, if you plant 1,000 trees, you've got to down 700 of them before you get the final crop.
Mm.
Anyway, he was very good at getting that across, but it's a fantastic program.
I mean, with the badgers, because the only thing that controls the badgers really are the motor car and to some extent dogs. And of course, badgers eat hedgehogs. They are a massive problem with TB. You know, I have to have my cattle checked every 4 years. Luckily, I'm not in a TB high area, but they've had a massive effect on the landscape of the TB. And I just think it's a shame. But people
and they eat any ground the nests and eggs of any ground nesting bird.
Yeah.
And the next problem which we're going to have is the dreaded wild boar. Which is creeping out from the Forest of Dean and from bits of Sussex.
And what do they destroy?
Well, they are omnivorous, big time.
Oh, right.
Not only eat our gardens, and some would mind terribly if the lawn was eaten, but they will eat anything that comes their way.
Mm.
But they are good to eat themselves, so we mustn't forget.
Oh, are
badgers
they?
Less good, but you can make a good ham from them.
Gosh, I think they'd do you for that. What, you mean the wild boar, not the badger?
Badger ham.
Yes.
No. I mean, I don't know where I still shave. There are so many people with beards these days, but my father went into the local chemist's and asked for a new shaving brush, and the man who was called Mr. Patterson, quite a strong Scottish accent, said, "Would you like a badger or a Brussel?" And, of course, he went for the badger. I don't know where they come from now, but...
Oh, God, interesting. But, yeah, no, wild boars, they are on our family crest, the Guinness family crest. So I do love the look of them.
Yes.
I think they're beautiful-looking things. But I prefer Gloucester old spots in my woods rather than wild boars.
They do
to
eat
be
the
honest.
Bark.
Yeah, we have such a low population, density population, that they don't really damage the trees.
Why is there a boar on the Guinness? There are very few Guinnesses who are boars.
It's the banking side of the boars.
Oh, yes.
Boars, yes. And I don't know why, actually. I've never asked them that. I only married one, so I'm not really one,
okay.
So I don't really know. But I must find out, because they're on the silver, they're on the hair brushes. Don't know whether they're bristles or not, but everywhere we've got this little boar.
Boar, okay. There's a family in Norfolk called the Bacons, and, of course, their crest
It's a pig.
Is a boar.
Oh, it's a boar, not
yes.
a pig. Right. Okay. Sir Francis Bacon.
Exactly. And,
Wow. Back to the garden. And we're sitting here in the sunken garden. Now, Mrs. Watson Kennedy, who you've mentioned, was a lovely, well-heeled owner that bought this in 1906. And she did masses of tree planting. She put in the sunken garden. Now, I can feel the wind here. Obviously, you get sea breezes. And I always think when you sink a garden, you are just that bit out of the wind. And if I lay down on this paving here, I wouldn't even be in the wind. Because just, I always think it's a very good ploy in a windy space to sink an area to get you out of the wind. And I think probably that's why she did it. Do you think partly? And because it's just lovely. It makes the space look bigger.
I don't know. She may have just been told by Guy Dorber what he wanted.
Guy Dorber was...
He was the architect for the wing. And I think he did do this design.
Right.
But I don't think he was a garden designer. No, he was an architect.
But maybe he was like Gertrude Jekyll and...
Lutyens,
and they did lots of sunken gardens. They were a wee bit later,
oh yes,
weren't
yes.
they?
Well,
But and when we did, we 1 year at Chelsea for our big plot garden, we sunk the whole thing down 600 mil. And when you saw all the other gardens either side of you, exactly the same size, but when we sunk it,
yeah, it made
it look
special.
Bigger
and it's
and
lovely
special.
Looking down.
Yeah,
and as long as
you're
you
right.
haven't had too many sherries, you wouldn't watch.
Yeah.
Pitching over.
It's a good ploy. And I think now with it's so easy to sink. You know, I could dig out this with a
yes.
mini digger in half a day.
Yes.
And people are always scared of moving earth, but I think it's one of the best ways to reprofile a garden to help make the design kick in really well. And you get the lovely elevated view from the sides, which is always nice.
The other thing that I don't know if they must have brought in some soil, but when you come down here, you go into stone and gravel. Where this bit of England was covered by glaciers,
yes,
and they deposited moraine. So it's pretty infertile,
gravelly,
but it is free draining. So the cellars of the house are very dry, but it is free draining, and that's why. When I was a child, there were peaches in each of these squares. They never did much, because I think it just caught the frost or something. But the peaches did well on walls, but not in the middle here. But my
That's
mother planted all these Mediterranean-y things, the rosemary of different sorts.
Phlomis, oenothras, agapanthus.
A lot of agapanthus.
All sorts of things coming out of the paper.
Well.
I love myrtle. I really think it's a wonderful shrub. Yours are going up to the height of the bottom floor windows, aren't they? I can
yes.
see they're 4 metres high.
And cistus do well here.
And tree peony, I see you've got
yes.
there. Yeah. And the yew, obviously, yew seems to do well everywhere as long as it's not too wet. But so, and Mrs. Watson Kennedy had 7 gardeners with Mr. Jarvis as the head gardener.
Yes.
Have you ever found the accounts from that day, the garden accounts?
No.
They would make your eyebrows stand up on end, wouldn't they?
I know.
Yeah.
but he was sent every year to Wisley. They stayed in a hotel, which is called the Hut, which until very recently was still on the edge of the A3, half a mile from Wisley. Mm. And he was put up there and would come back with good ideas.
Right. That's amazingly
a forward-thinking, absolutely.
To keep
yes.
up on trend and
yeah.
get with it.
Yes.
That is a good idea. And she also created a bowling green, which was sheltered by Maribel plum hedges.
Yes.
Is there anything of that left?
Yes, you can still see the layout of it. I planted box to mark the lines.
Yes.
Of where the
Mirabelles.
Where the fence around the
bowling green
was.
Right.
And of course, I think in the Second World War, it ploughed up to grow potatoes. And then self-sown with elm, ash, and sycamores.
Oh, right.
And then undergrowth loved by woodcock now.
Oh, really? So, and also the wall garden, obviously, you know, the winds, the sea breezes here, pretty strong. And wall gardens, I think people don't really appreciate just how much they have at their own microclimate. They will be 5-6 degrees warmer than outside because of the wind chill factor. You obviously then have the wonderful south-facing walls that just soak up the heat and push it out in the evening. And yours are beautiful flint walls. I mean, I've never seen such a beautiful wall garden. And it's not 6 acres big.
No, it's not too big. But the wall at one end is really, I'm hopeless at heights, but it's about
3 metres, I would say.
3 or 4 metres tall. Yeah. And in 1953, there was a big flood down the East Coast.
What caused that?
Yes, well, I think there was storms and pressure in the wrong direction and things.
So it was seawater that flooded.
Seawater came down the East Coast. And
came right into here.
Right in here. A huge ship's timber was washed up against the, smashed the wall flat. So the sea came in. And after the flood, my grandfather had it rebuilt, but not as high. And now everyone knows about using mortar. It was done with a very, very strong cement mix, and it's very hard to get a nail in.
Right, so you have to use a drill and rule plugs and all that.
But it used to have lovely peaches on it. Mm. And I must, anyway, we must plant some more.
So the espalier pear has also lines one of the paths, and some of them are left, the Dorian de Commis, which is a classic sweet melt-in-the-mouth pear, and they flank the path. They're lovely, aren't they?
They are lovely, and they still flower and do produce in a bit, but they are looking sad and, again, need replacing.
So what they did at Highgrove, they had the lovely old espaliers around the wall there, and what they did is they cut them down and then they regrafted new pear scions onto the old rootstock.
Goodness.
So you have all the energy of the old rootstock pushing up into the new scion. And that's a way of getting a bit more maturity and keeping something of what's there.
How interesting. I didn't know that.
Mm, because nowadays they tend to use something like a 106 rootstock for an espalier, so it doesn't grow too big. But in past times, they would have just put them in a restricted rootstock to stop them growing too big. You know, sometimes they put them in little chambers and things like they do with figs now. But the other things about this lovely old garden that I found interesting, your irrigation system. So you've got raised tanks up on pillars, which in a lot of gardens we work on, they do this to get the gravity
get the
fed.
Pressure.
Yeah.
Well, yes, it's hardly working now, but it used to.
So now you wouldn't. You can get these cheap little pumps, which are superb.
Oh, I know.
So you wouldn't bother, would you?
No. But we have a well here. We water was pumped up into the tanks, and that would go wherever pipes had been laid.
And is any of that water brackish? Is it salty?
No.
Because you're near the sea.
No, well, it's straight from the chalk. It's very good, hard water.
It was I only asked that because we had a job near Kettering, which is, you know, maybe 50 miles from the sea. And they put in a borehole and an irrigation system to the garden. And the irrigation water came out salty, brackish, and was killing the plants. And so I was fascinated that the saline can come in that far. But here you are almost on the sea and your well is clean. So they knew what they were doing. They went into the right seams when they sunk that well.
That's interesting about Kettering. Mm. But you mustn't over if you do over pump. And there are springs all along this coast in the where the chalk comes to the surface.
Yes.
There are springs
spring line. Right, and it comes out and feeds the marshes, which is why you get the extraordinary habitat of the fresh water and the seawater.
Yes.
It's coming together. Yeah, along the marshes. So behind us, we've got the guys with up the scaffold fixing a bit on the building. What are they doing, Desmond?
Oh, the pan tiles.
The beautiful old clay pan tiles.
Old pan tiles, and as a valley, and it's
a valley gutter.
A valley gutter has sprung a leak. About in the 1980s, long before the days of the lottery, But there was a very good organisation called the Historic Buildings Council, based in Savile Row.
Yes.
And you could, if your building was good enough, churches and barns and houses, you could apply for grants. And we did get a 40% grant, and we had bricks made for the pediments of the windows, did all the lead, re-roofed the house, and did an awful lot. And thank goodness we did it then. And the water used to pour through the house after a rain. And anyway, we did have a drip, drip, drip reoccurring, and something has gone wrong. So they're going to patch up.
I see. Well, to anyone who's listening and finds it irritating, I'm sorry about the noise in the back. But at that time in 1906, she planted Weeping Beech, Cutleaf Beech, Monterey Pines, all which you've still got here today.
Yes.
But the flood did kill the Scots pines, is
Scots
that right?
Pines,
but not the Corsican, which are Corsican, more salt resistant.
And the Monterey pine are salt resistant.
Oh, that's interesting.
There was a big eucalyptus in the garden, which I've never replanted. And I'd like to plant. I mean, eucalyptus can be overdone.
Yeah.
And I don't really approve of them as a forest, but they can be lovely.
Well, there's a whole range of eucalyptus that you can grow in this country, quite interesting ones that are hardy. And my mum, what she did when she started her nursery is she planted a load and she cut them down each year, and she took the foliage to London. I think she must have had a lover in London, and she sold them to Pulbrook and Gould.
Oh, yes.
And it was a nice little income stream. So what you could do, Desmond, is you could grow some in your wall garden or somewhere in lines, coppice them down slowly and sell them in the cafe.
Yes, no, that's true.
Nice
little eucalyptus. And it's one of the things that deer, I'm sure, unless it's absolutely off its head, are going to eat.
But in the wall garden, they don't come in.
No, they won't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the other interesting thing from the earlier planting was a umbrella pine, which had been slightly shrouded by sycamores, so its umbrella shape wasn't highly developed. But my son shot down with his rifle a fir cone. We tested the seeds. They were viable, because they're rather wonderful big fir cones. They're
yes.
the ones that you get the seeds for pesto.
Pine nuts. So that is the Pinus pinea, isn't it?
If
I think I'm right in saying.
Name.
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we germinated them, and we planted 50 either side of the road between Blakeney and Clye, and they will look rather marvellous against the sky.
And I think you'll find
the buses walk clean.
Yeah,
in about 50 years' time.
I think you'll find that the revenue from those, because they are very productive with pine nuts, and I can't remember, it's something like £50 a year a tree will produce.
Golly.
You'll wait a few years, but that will be another source, Desmond.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Yes, we hadn't thought of that. I've seen people collecting them in parks in Rome.
Yeah.
But
they are highly productive in the UK.
I think it might be a useful job for the local penal colony. You know, cracking pine nuts must be one of the most mind-bogglingly dull jobs.
I think you'll develop a little roller that
little
will do
roller.
It for you. Yeah, it's a
and
nice
a small
little project.
Colony.
Yeah, I think so, yes. Anyway, the other thing that I found fascinating was that in the olden days, or in the past years, you covered your figs with bags, paper bags, your mum did.
Plastic bags.
And her
stockings.
And her stockings, because birds will come and peck them. But you now say that the bird population, the sparrowhawks and things like that, the kestrels, have come and eaten the songbirds. And so, you
not
know...
Not so much kestrels.
Not so good, but the sparrowhawks, they are a bit of a nuisance, aren't they? And your songbird population has definitely reduced. Are you still noticing that?
Yes. Well, I mean, absolutely. That we used to, my sister and I would go around with bag, cover the figs. It was the only way we'd get any.
Yeah.
and because there were so many blackbirds, thrushes, starlings, those birds have declined enormously, as have the rise of the sparrowhawk.
Mm.
The sparrowhawk is the naughtiest one for killing the songbirds.
Mm.
But even in the last 10 years, I have noticed as the buzzard numbers have risen and the kite numbers have risen, the sparrowhawk numbers have fallen.
Oh, really?
And it is balancing out.
Right. You see, I find this fascinating because I planted maybe 1,000 trees about 30 years ago in our garden around it, shelter belts, because we're so exposed. Totally changed the microclimate. Fantastic. But to start with, then the bird population of songbirds zoomed up.
Yes.
And then recently, as the shade cover in the woods come up, we've got lots of crows, magpies, raven. And I'll open the curtains in the morning.
Now
and
ravens.
And ravens.
They've arrived.
Yeah. And the lawn will be black with ravens. And the songbirds have gone down. Then the other morning, the farmer next door was obviously cautious about his wheat, which was on the point of harvest. And I heard this man come bang, bang, bang all day. And then the next day, the population dramatically shot down. And hopefully now the songbirds will come back. But they are very dynamic, the bird populations. And I wondered when you said the songbirds are gone, is that also because the insect population has absolutely plummeted because of everything we're doing to the climate? And there is no doubt the insect population is absolutely declined. We no longer get our windscreen spattered with it. So the birds' food has decreased. What's your take on it?
Insect numbers have fallen, and the great organization, the Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust, who's done the longest running survey on the South Downs and monitoring insect numbers on farms.
Yes.
And they say surprisingly, that the figure quoted was 37% fall. I would have thought it would have been more, but perhaps that's in that area.
Yeah.
And every bit of farmland has been over-farmed.
Pigeons is all that's there, really, isn't it? Pigeons. And rabbits.
Well, no rabbit, very, very few rabbits here now.
Oh,
that's
right.
Another one.
Myxomatosis?
Myxomatosis and a horrid disease, ulcerative something, and they bleed, internal bleeding.
Oh.
And I actually love seeing a rabbit now because birds of prey can feed on them. At the moment, they've moved on to leverets, young hares, and other birds. And the birds that are meant to be feeding on carrion,
dead food,
buzzards, and the kites have. There isn't enough carrion. Other than a bit of roadkill.
Carrion is
dead
food, just so everyone knows. But you see, are the gamekeepers around us, because we've got the sky is black with red kites since the reintroduction, and they say they think it's actually not right that they only feed on carrion. They reckon the carrion, that the red kites feed on live mammals too. You think so too, do you?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And people on tractors working on the fields will see... You know, you'll see what happens because they swoop down and have the young hares.
Yeah.
We really have got to a stage where we must manage nature. Mm. Can't leave it to nature.
Yeah.
And one of the mysterious things, the greatest naturalist and bird person and creature, man who's brought the awareness of wildlife to everybody in their homes via the television, is David Attenborough.
Yeah.
But he doesn't like to be drawn on the subject of managing something.
It's too controversial. You
know. I don't know, and that's such a shame. And this is my one opportunity. He went round the gardens of Buckingham Palace with Queen Elizabeth, and there was a big nest of carrion crows in the tall trees, and she said, "Look, carrion crows, we don't like them," and he changed the subject. She knows about, you know, predators and the management. We've got to have a balance. Now London is completely taken over by very beautiful but very, very naughty parrots.
Oh, parakeets. Parakeets. Dreadful. Absolutely.
And they
dreadful.
Eat baby birds. And
yeah. No, that's a real problem. But so, Desmond, back to your beautiful garden here. So you do lots of work here. The pond was dredged way back. And you, when as a lad, you helped dredge it and you cut down the dead elms from Dutch elm and you cleared brambles and you saw martagan lilies come back in the new light and peonies flowering in the new light created by managing the woodland above it. So what's on your hit list now with the garden? How are you going to take them forward or manage them?
Yes. Well, the pond needs re-dredging.
Do you do it with a pump?
Well, now I think we would use it a pump.
A pump, much easier.
We've got a lot of liquid mud.
Yeah, and you have to keep stirring. For anyone who doesn't know, when you dredge a lake, you have to go through massive things with the water board, don't you, to get approval, and you have to dump the silt massive distance from the lake so it doesn't repollute it. But if you, I think I'm right in saying, if you do it with a pump and you keep stirring the mud so it keeps the pump flowing, it's a much easier, more economic way to do it.
I think it's anaerobic now, so there's not a lot of life in there.
Well, you can, you know, you can put something in the pond, in the lake, in the late summer, which makes it more aerobic and makes that, it's called aqua soil, that lovely silt in the bottom.
Yes.
You can add, I can tell you, Kemple, if you like, Argacel at AGA, and you put it in this, it's something like calcium sulfate or something. You put it, sprinkle it in, and it turns that anaerobic into aerobic, and it makes the whole thing much more healthy.
We must try that.
Because that's an easier way to do it than dredging.
Yes, yes. Well, we it's very nice. We have paths which we mow through the, I'm going to say, long grass, and a lot of bulbs still. Again,
yes.
Bulbs that have been going for a long time. But then it's nice to have a few magnolias and, you know, more exotic things. We could plant more of them. And, I mean, there's always schemes. It's a matter of time and labour.
And how many people have you got in the garden now?
Well, primarily Amanda.
Yes.
Sometimes Amanda is fantastic. Amanda Bennett has done an amazing job because she worked with my mother and been here a long time now. And she's got, we all think along the same lines. And her daughter's helped in the past, Poppy. And JC and Gareth, all who work on the farm, help a bit. But, and...
No volunteers?
No, we must long to get volunteers. We've never quite mastered it.
They are quite hard to manage sometimes.
Yes.
So, yeah. But, I mean, that... So, basically, one full-time gardener for this. Oh, my God,
yes.
Desmond. How do you do it?
Yes. Yes, well, she doesn't do the mowing, but and then there's a lot of hedges to clip.
And who does that?
Well, that's going to be done by Gareth, and we'll see how he gets on.
Yeah. Oh, Desmond, I feel for you. I mean, this year I got really on the back foot, so I bring in, you know, tree surgeons don't have much to do in the summer.
No.
And they come in, these big, strong lads with big kit, and they did it in seconds. Whereas I was up there, it would take me weeks.
No, that's right. I used to cut these by hand.
But these guys with a big kit.
No, big kit, yeah. Mm,
I think that's your answer.
And we haven't gone down the route of electric motors yet.
Oh, they're wonderful.
But they are, I think, we've got to make sure everything's ready for it. And then
They're so light.
Very light.
The battery-powered hedge cutters and the battery-powered lawnmowers and the robotic mowers, I tell you, they've saved my life.
Yes, and less noisy. I visited a friend in Suffolk, and we sat in her garden after lunch. It must have been September. There were leaf blowers, mowers, hedge cutters, strimmers. I mean, there was no chance for a blackbird being heard.
Good point. I hadn't thought of it like that. Desmond, have you any tip then to have someone whose garden's getting a wee bit what is you, a wee bit too much to manage, or any tip that you can give a gardener that wants to create a paradise like yours?
Well, I mean, not be afraid of letting something that you like and is pretty move into the paths, and not be too strict on things.
So the sowing
themselves. That you, except that's a little rose that came from a place in Hampshire called Bidston, and that
is it a Spinosissima, the little prickly rose
With a little
white flower. Yeah, I've got that. It's lovely.
So pretty, but my goodness, it'll come under the paving stones and up again.
Oh, it suckers. Oh,
but
I didn't realise.
But there are lovely things. All these evening primroses. They remind me of my grandfather, who once, when we were trying to get him, he slightly reached a dreamy stage of his life, and we said, come this way, we're going to go and have lunch, or we're going to have supper. And he said, no, there's a party, we're going to a party. And I said, I'm not sure, why do you say that? He said, look out there, there are all those girls in yellow dresses. And it was a lovely thought, and I think of him every time, and I think of all the my grandparents and my mother a lot.
Oh, Notha, the evening primrose. They're wonderful. They grew them commercially on a farm near us for evening primrose oil. And when you saw them in flower, hundreds of acres of these beautiful pale yellow blooms. They're magnificent.
Crushed a seed, do they?
I think so, for the evening primrose oil.
What
it must
do you
be.
Do with the evening primrose
I think it's
oil?
Meant to calm you down. Is
oh,
that right? Or is
that.
It for menstrual tension or something Ooh. Like that? Do you suffer from that?
Mm. The other thing we have is a lot of valerian grows in the walls here.
The pink one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Isn't that good for calming, stopping depression?
I think
depression?
You're right, valerian tea, yeah. I do think it undermines the walls a bit because the roots go right
oh,
in,
that,
don't they?
I know. That's the one thing I like to spray.
Yeah.
And our most exotic bit of self-sown plants, which have been allowed to get away with it, is a fantastic rosemary, but growing out of the wall.
Oh,
I'll
no.
Show you.
Is it a prostrate rosemary?
No, it's not. Oh. It's not right, but it's May very... I'll show it to you.
May I pinch cutting?
Yes.
Yeah. Lovely. Thank you, Desmond. So it's been fantastic to see this. The most wonderful house I've ever seen in the world. And the present I've bought you is a Plumbago auriculata. It's called the Cape Leadwort. People used to say it was tender, but in my garden, which is East Midlands, far colder than you, it actually survives the winter. And it has these beautiful bright blue flowers, a bit like the colour of your shirt, and they go on and on and on, often till Christmas with me. And when I've given it to people in London, so I gave some to Matthew Potter, who used to run Wisley, he said in his London garden it's evergreen as well. But in my garden it dies back. I think in your garden it might be evergreen outside if you tucked it up against a wall. But I think they are the most wonderful scrambling. They'll go up to 4 metres. But perfect plant. So I hope it does well with you and I hope you enjoy it. Just as a little momentum of this lovely time I've really enjoyed.
Well, thank you very much. And it'll be something to remember you with and your visit. So thank you.